Your Partner in Success Radio is a free business podcast with host Denise Griffiths. It's all about great stories, conversation, and context to help you move your business and life forward with actionable tips and advice from her guest experts. To listen and subscribe, just find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume your podcasts.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. What is SEO? Search engine optimization, obviously. But why does your online real estate need it? I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and today, digital marketer, blogger, influencer, and marketing strategist, Eric Seropian, joins me to discuss SEO, and why your small business should be using this, like Facebook, Instagram, Google, and many more platforms to get your message out. So SEO, search engine optimization, just so we're not confused about that, is the practice of increasing the quantity and the quality of traffic to your website through organic search engine results. SEO can take many forms, and Eric is going to show us different ways to serve information to your targeted audience. Sorry, I'm all of a sudden just biting my own tongue here. So Eric is here to share the basics of SEO. We all need to understand what that is, how it can help a small business, what is Google looking for in order to rank your website and your online presence, and what upsets Google. And that's a great question because Google seems to be a little touchy about a lot of things. So good morning, Eric. It's good to have you here. Before we get started, tell our audience a bit about yourself.
Good morning, Denise. Thank you so much for having me on your show. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's my honor.
Thank you. A little bit about myself. Well, I own a digital marketing agency in the Los Angeles area, and we have clients in Los Angeles and nationwide, and we have a couple of clients that are out of the country. And so also my background is in teaching SEO. There's the academy here in Los Angeles where I teach part-time best practices for search engine optimization. And SEO is kind of a game changer for small businesses, so they should pay some attention to receive that free traffic coming in from Google search results.
Exactly. I need to ask you before I get too far down the road, your website name, what does that mean?
Well, I live in Los Angeles. A part of Los Angeles is the South Bay area of Los Angeles. And I grew up in the area. I live in the South Bay area. And so I named the company, This Is My South Bay.
I love it. I mean, it just speaks to the heart and the love that you have for your area.
Yeah,
a lot of companies
don't do that. It's a good way to show almost a case study where you can, if you're trying to build a local brand, a local business, you know, whether you're an accountant or you're a restaurant or, you know, a local business, you're able to, you know, really tap into growing your social media locally, growing your search engine ranking locally, et cetera, as opposed to, you know, if you're a real estate agent in one part of town and then someone calls you and they're on the other side of the country, it doesn't really help. You're not going to be able to monetize them. So there's a way to grow your social media geographically, really geo-targeting the following if you do some things correctly. And also that applies to your search engine optimization campaign.
And see, I didn't think about that largely because I am digital. I'm completely virtual, have been for a decade or better. Nobody knows where I live other than, you know, the general geographical area that I live. I have a toll-free number. My address is not listed anywhere. Actually, my house is blurred out on Google. I just don't want to be found. I don't want people knocking on my door and say, Denise, can you build me a website? Sure. Email me. So for me, that's very, very different. And that's why I wanted to ask you about, you know, the local aspect of it, because it just honestly never occurred to me.
Well, the local, as far as what you're explaining, I would suggest to you, if you can even rent a small space, an office space, even if it's a couple hundred square feet, you're going to incur some you know, costs as far as rent goes, but you're shying away from a lot of this local SEO and, you know, on your social media platforms, on your Google Maps, Google Places. These are all very powerful platforms that can drive traffic and potentially business to you.
Exactly. And I did
but
know that.
But you can't do it from your house.
Right. And I did. I knew that. I was protecting my home. But it just never occurred to me that you might want to tap into something local. I'm pretty well national in Canada, so international, I guess. But I can understand why small businesses who are working from home, basically virtually, but they're serving a more local audience than I am, would definitely need to start looking around for office share or something, you know, something that can get them into, you know, Google Maps, if you will. And that leads me to another question. If you don't have any of that you just spoke of, but you still want to have your business on Google, is that even possible? Or do you have to have Google Maps?
No, you don't have to have Google Maps. You know, you can. There are a lot of businesses out there that are virtual, that Google understands certain businesses. Now, if you're running a business where you're selling food from your home, that might be a concern.
Sure.
You know, if you're doing pharmacy from your home and things like that. But, you know, it's a known fact that there's a lot of people that are building websites, that are doing digital marketing, that are doing certain things, graphic design, et cetera, from their home. They don't really need to be at an office. And frankly, these days, they don't even need to travel to the clients to service them. They could work off of Zoom and email and phone call and FaceTime and everything. So certain industries, I know that Google understands, you know, the thinking behind it.
Excellent. So what process would somebody like me, who is a virtual business, who does not want anybody knocking at their front door, what steps would they take to get listed on Google?
Well, let me back up a step for your audience that might not know what SEO actually does or is. So when you type in something in the Google search box, let's say web designer in this case, somebody, you type that in, and then you have the first couple of listings that are paid. So that's part of Google Ads. Those are people, companies that have paid for to be found. And then you have usually the local apparatus. And then after that is websites that Google thinks is a good fit for what you're searching for. Now that is usually those websites are not paying for that. That's organically. Google just takes it and puts it on their search engine. Now that, as I just mentioned, is kind of a game changer when you can have that free traffic coming in from Google, targeted traffic coming in from Google. That changes, you know, a business and how it grows. And so how to get, you know, the basics of SEO. Basically, you want to make sure that your website is functioning correctly. You don't have any broken pages, broken links on it. Like if you click on the About Us page on your website and it's a broken link, it doesn't go anywhere. That's not a good user experience. And that is something that Google is, it's the first search engine of its kind, where there have been other search engines that have tried, you know, doing pay-per-click and so on. The main reason that Google is successful is that it thinks of the user first and the advertiser second. So if your website isn't functioning properly, if there are broken links, if the pages aren't tagged correctly, if the load time on the website is too long, things like that, it's going to be a problem, because if I have to wait 5 seconds for a page to load or 10 seconds, I'm out of there. I'm on to the next website if I'm doing a search for a particular product or service. And one of the best ways that people can go and check these things, there's Google Webmaster Tools. You can go in, you can see which links are broken. You can see which, you know, what Google thinks of your website. Sometimes I just got a warning like an hour ago from a client from Google saying that on some of the pages, the font is too small. And so it's letting us know, hey, you know, take care of this. so we can continue to rank you. But if I ignore it and I, you know, in the future I build out more pages where the font is too small, it's going to affect the ranking on the website.
I'm glad you said that, because I just got that same email about my personal website, which honestly I don't pay much attention to. And I went, really? So now I have to go fix that. So it's not my major, it's my personal website. I really don't give it any love, and I should. So this is all terrific information. So does this, you mentioned the basics of SEO. Have we covered most of it? Because I love that Google has a checklist that kind of goes through us and goes, hey, you know, this is not really working and you're not going to show up. But if you would cover the basics of SEO, because that's really the premise of what we're talking about. And then I've got questions after that.
Of course. So, you know, Google doesn't have like a manual per se, but sometimes it kind of gives you a heads up on, hey, do this or don't do that kind of a thing. But what you want to do is you want to make sure that if you're going to do SEO, there are certain things that Google is looking at, and it's kind of playing detective to figure out if they should rank you, and where are you, and what are your specialties, what's your niche, and so on. So one of the biggest things is what other people are saying about you online. So Google is going in and looking at your Facebook reviews, your Google reviews, looking at Yelp, and seeing what others are saying about you. It's one thing for me to say all the nice things about myself and to send out press releases on how great I am and so on. It's something else for another person to say something nice about me. So that applies in life, and it applies online also. And you need to be consistent. Make sure that if you're going to be building out pages, if you're going to be blogging and so on, if you're going to blog, let's say, 50 times a year, try to do it weekly, as opposed to, you know, on January 1st, just creating 50 blogs and putting it out there. It needs to be somewhat of a consistent flow to things. And that applies to when you get, you know, rough Yelp reviews. I know people that have, you know, they didn't have any Yelp reviews. They've been open for 10 years. And then in 1 month, they get 50 Yelp reviews. And then the following year, they don't have any Yelp reviews. That raises all kinds of flags with Yelp, with Google, with everybody. Like, something's off here, and try to watch out for that. Another thing that Google looks at, oddly enough, is your social media campaign. So if your social media is not growing, or it's staying at the same place, or even shrinking your followers, that's going to be a negative score. If you don't post, you have your social media setup and you don't post, that's a negative thing. If you, same example with the reviews. If you post, you know, January 1st, 50 posts, and you don't post the rest of the year, that's not a good sign. It's got to be consistent. Consistency is something that applies in life, and it applies online. If you post and you have 100 followers and no one likes your post, no one comments, no one shares, that's going to be a negative, as opposed to if people are sharing and commenting and your following is growing. Google is watching all of this, and it's seeing over the long term how things are playing out.
So consistency is very important across the board.
Absolutely.
Okay.
There's something called online link building. So, for instance, let's say you build my website for me. It's a wonderful website. I'm very happy with it. It has all the bells and whistles I wanted and more. And so I can go on my website blog and write something saying how wonderful you are and I would recommend you to everyone. And I give you a clickable link from my website to yours. That's called online link building. So the more websites you have pointing to your website, the better off you're going to be, because it's going to be every time that you receive a link from another website, that's kind of like a confirmation or a thumbs up from the website owner to your website that, okay, this, you know, I'm happy with this website, this company, et cetera. And that's probably one of the biggest parts of SEO is online link building.
I have to say, I'm giving myself a big high five right now because I was doing that. I have been doing that. And I didn't know to do this. It just seemed the right thing to do. But when you go to my podcast website, Your Partner in Success Radio, and you'll see, you'll pop up a couple of times over there. The graphic that we created for this is going to be on there. It's going to link to the podcast. If I've got your book, you know, or something else that, you know, you gave me that I want people to go look at, that's going to be there in my leadership library, and that's going to go link directly back to your website. So I do this all the time, and I did it just because it seemed courteous. It seemed smart. I wasn't even thinking about Google linking. Remember when I told you earlier in the green room, I'm a brilliant web developer. I'm very, very good at social media marketing. What I know about SEO is dangerous, so I never take it on for my clients. I know just a little bit how to tag it, how to write the proper, you know, tags and H2 and all of that in the back of the website. But when a client comes to me and says, listen, I need SEO, I'm not your person, I'm not your girl, and I will decline that business. I'll help you find somebody, I'll recommend somebody. I do not want to ruin your business by doing bad work for you. So I'm so glad you brought that up, because I was doing it just by accident.
And I think that you can track a lot of these things using, you know, webmaster tools, using your Google Analytics. You want to make sure that, you know, your time on site is within a certain range. Average visitors on a visitor going on average number of pages is within a certain range. And the big thing is there's this thing on Google Analytics that's called bounce rate, where someone comes to your website and without visiting any other pages, they just leave. This isn't always a bad metric, because I have clients that their client has bought from them before a service or a product, and they go to the website just to click call and be able to, you know, either drive over to them or to call them or whatever. It's not always a bad metric. But for Google, if you have a large enough number of your visitors that are bouncing, it's not a good thing. So what I would suggest is, while you're doing all of this, is to be able to track everything and make sure that everything is, you know, within play.
No, I did know about bounce, because that's always been a scary thing for me. You know, look at something and go, what the heck? It's a gorgeous page. Why aren't they staying? And then you go fix it because you figure out what went wrong. But yeah, bounces. But I'm glad to hear you say that it can be a decent metric if they're at the contact page, or, you know, they're up there in your header and they're just clicking on, you know, contact us or something. So I get that.
So on the homepage, a lot of times you have on your homepage, you have your call to actions, even a lot of times above the fold, where you have your Google Maps, where they can just click it and see exactly where you are. They can call, they can email, everything is right there. So it's not always the worst thing. But again, it's just one of those things that you have to, you know, Google is watching everything, trying to figure out what would be the best possible search results for their user. And they're using, you know, many things out there.
So a lot of what you're talking about, I think I knew at the back of my little pea brain, but I've never studied it because SEO is not, I'm not an expert. I don't intend to become an expert. There are experts that I would rather refer my clients to that I know will do a slap-up job and I won't mess anything up. So, but a lot of what you're talking about, I'm generally aware of. I just had not delved into it. So I'm so glad that we're having this conversation. And if I don't know about it, and I'm a nerd. Look, I'm a nerd in stilettos. I know a lot about a lot of things. I know just enough about SEO to be really dangerous. So my point is, if I'm learning already just a whole bunch from you, I can imagine our audiences as well. So what I'm going to do is quiet myself down and let you talk, because you've got a lot to share. I'll pop in and say, hey, you know, I've got a question. But if you don't mind, I know you teach this, and you've got some really great case studies. So if you don't mind just kind of rocking and rolling with it, I'll let you run.
You. Well, there was something that just happened a couple of days ago, so I'll share that. We had a client that it's an e-commerce site. We took them on as a client. They probably have about 5,000 products that they're selling online. And so one of the mistakes that people do is that they take a product and then they call it, let's say, T-shirt/X5214 or whatever for the SKU number. So when Google looks at that, they don't know what X1214 means. So a better way to do it is to make sure, so if they have 5,000 products, that gives you 5,000 chances to get optimized. So it's a lot of work to be able to optimize each one of those pages, but that's what you're looking for. You're looking for that free traffic coming in from Google. So instead of doing it that way, you could do website/t-shirt/gray collar checkered whatever. You could have it in the description. So that way, Google can understand exactly what you're talking about. So it's important that each one of your pages is a chance to be optimized. So don't think of it like, I'll just optimize these and then Google will pick up the rest. A lot of people, sometimes they make the mistake of just optimizing everything to the homepage. And frankly, you're putting all your eggs in one basket. You need to, you know, do as many, if not all, of your pages. And there are going to be pages that are, for instance, you could go to your webmaster tools, and then you can go back a day, a year, however long you want to go, and look at the landing pages. See where the traffic is coming in from. The highest is going to be the homepage. But then after that, there are going to be a lot of pages that are ranked or that are getting traffic. And so you can figure out, okay, this is a good page. It's converting. We're doing business with this product or whatever. And let's do more optimization for this. And let's do it in, you know, certain ways. And so you have to be able to, first of all, gather the data. And after that, act towards the data, because the data is out there. Now, one of the ways that one of the first things I do when I take on a client together for me, 20 keywords that they would love to rank for. And I don't want it to be like, for example, I'll use jewelry as an example. I don't want a jewelry store to tell me I want the keyword jewelry. I want them to tell me diamond engagement ring, pearl necklace, you know, things that are very specific, as opposed to if they got ranked for the keyword jewelry, which is almost impossible because there are huge companies. You're going to be, if you're lucky, you're going to be on page 3 for the keyword jewelry. But if you got the keyword jewelry and somebody came to your website looking for a silver brooch, you don't have it. So it was a waste of effort to do that anyway. So if you're looking for someone that is looking for a men's platinum diamond wedding band, why not optimize for that keyword as opposed to doing men's jewelry or just jewelry?
Or so Rolex repair. You know, if you have services exactly like that, you know, make sure people know not many jewelry, look, I was a jeweler. Not many small jewelry businesses do watch repair. We did. And after 2008, that's kind of what kept us afloat until it came time to close. We went from selling $20,000 Piagets to repairing Rolexes. I mean, yeah. You know, business changed. And we had to make sure that people understood that we did that.
And you want to make sure that people understand it on the website. Your audience is almost divided into two audiences. When they come to your website, it's almost divided into two. You want to be able to speak to the person that lands on your website so they know exactly what you're doing without getting too technical. But you also want to have enough of a description, enough pictures, everything, so that Google understands what you do. So sometimes people try to choose between the two. They'll do all kinds of, you know, you'll land on their page and they've got probably a 10,000 word explanation on, let's say, Rolex repair. And so at some point, I'm not going to read 10,000 words to figure out if I want to come into that store. So, but it is good for Google to see, you know, what you're doing, especially if the content is relevant. So you kind of have to choose between the two, because at the end of the day, if you get the traffic and people are leaving without staying on the site or it's not converting, then you're going to have a problem with Google anyway. So I always choose when I'm creating content, I'm talking to the user. And the user will, if they stay on the site long enough and the bounce rate is low and certain metrics are in play, my ranking is going to go up also, because Google's watching that. Google is looking at your Google Analytics, and it's trying to decide, okay, there's, you know, if you had 100% bounce rate on your website, it's going to be difficult over time to get ranked, because Google is going to realize that those keywords are not a good fit with your website, and they're not going to rank you. They're going to find another website that has a lower bounce rate, more time on site, more pages viewed, and so on. And so try to speak to your end user. Everything else will kind of work itself out. And so we're in the process of optimizing 5,000 product pages for that client right now, which if you put all 5,000 product pages together, I don't think they're getting 10 visitors from Google per day. So there's a huge opportunity there for them to be able to create all this content and put it out there.
And you said something very interesting that you know, the search engine has to be able to read it almost like human speak. I think a lot of people have the mistaken attitude or idea that Google can read X's and O's and, you know, all kinds of esoteric stuff. They can't. You know, they have to be able to read it the way, at least this is my observation, they have to be able to read it the way we do. I have people come to me and say, okay, I want to get this website. It's going to be XYZ Corp. Well, what does that mean? Well, it means XYZ Corp. Is Google going to understand that? Is, you know, you, if you say XYZ Corp to your mom, is she going to get anything out of that? To me, and you know, please tell me if I'm way, way off base, it has to be readable. It has to make sense for the human and for the, you know, Google. So if you're going to make your website or your product a bunch of initials, I don't think you've done anything really smart there. So tell me if I'm close or right or wrong, or what do you think?
Well, as far as, you know, labeling product, the stock numbers or the SKU numbers, that doesn't really work for Google.
Right.
So you want to make sure that Google is understanding. A lot of times people will even put their industry in their URL. If they're a real estate agent, they'll say Los Angeles real estate agent or whatever .com. And they'll, so that Google knows exactly what they're doing. But then there are other people that, you know, want to name the company after themselves, or there's some initials or what have you. It's when Google comes in and in that split second spiders your site and leaves, they should know what everything is about. It should all be tagged correctly. The H1, H2, H3 tags should be there. The pages should be so that they're all lined up, so that in that split second, Google is trying to decide what the heck you're doing and how to index you or to even index you. And so you want to be clear on that.
And that's my point. If you make it so esoteric that your mom's not going to know what it is, I'm not sure what you're doing. It has to be readable.
Agreed.
Okay, good. I didn't think I was too far off, but you're the SEO guy, and I'm here to learn. So I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, so keep on going, because I know you have a lot to share.
So one of the, going back to what I was saying before, so when somebody is interested in working with us, I ask them for two things. The first is, give me 20 keywords that you would love to rank for. Very relevant. Your product or service that you're offering that you would be thrilled to rank for with Google. And the second is, give me 10 to 20 direct competitors so that we can figure out what they're up to. And so usually when people give competitors, it's people that are companies that are doing better than themselves, or they feel like they are. And so we're able to go in with different apps. I use Majestic SEO or SEMrush, I use a lot, where you can go in and you can put in your URL and you can see which keywords you're ranked for, at what position. Since most of it is open source, you can see what's going on. And so you can do that with your competitors. You can see where they're ranked, how, average month, how many searches that keyword gets, what position they're in, et cetera, et cetera. So because a lot of times we get stuck on, okay, give me some keywords that you would like to rank for, and they have to really, it's a difficult process. They need some time to figure out the keywords. And so this way we can give them a report. We can put together their 10 or 20 competitors, put together a list and say, your competitors are ranked for these keywords. Check off on the report the keywords that you would love to rank for. And that's a good starting point. And in time, you know, we look into other competitors and you know, sometimes even if it's a restaurant in LA, but you know, we can look at restaurants that are similar to that restaurant in Texas or in, you know, other states and get some ideas for keywords also. And so once we identify the keywords that we're going to try to rank for, then we need to start to build out content. And that content can be landing pages, it can be blog posts. And then once you take that blog post, you're going to put it on your social media, your LinkedIn, Facebook. If it's a picture, you can put it on Yelp, Instagram, Twitter, everywhere. And also what we talked about earlier as far as doing link building. So if you can build links to that page or straight to your homepage, that's a good way to go also. So everything is there. You can see on some of these, with these apps, you can see your competitors, where they're getting their keywords. You can see where they're getting their links. So if you have a direct competitor, you can see where they're getting their links from other websites. You can reach out to those websites and ask for a link also. So this cuts out a lot of the guesswork.
Right.
Yeah, so that you can look at their backlinks and see your competitors. So you can do just a little bit more than they're doing.
Which is very smart. And something you just said reminded me of what you said at the top of the hour, if you will, that, you know, the index page is not always, people seem to think that if you build your website, everybody's going to go to the index page. Maybe that was true back in the day, but it is no longer, just as you said just now, blogging. If you take that blog, you put it on social media, people click on it, they're going into the bowels of your website. They're going into the blog section. They're not even going to the index page. So, you know, and I do tell my clients, listen, every page needs to be optimized. You know, we need to have SEO, we need to have tags, titles, all of it. Because the index page is not the front door anymore. People come in from all over the place.
Agreed. And usually the landing page or the home page generally isn't the page that you convert from.
Right.
So you have the conversion that comes in where they land on the page. And then I'll use your example with the Rolex repair. You know, you might have diamond jewelry, color stone jewelry, et cetera. And then there might be a place for repairs. And when they click on repairs, it might be, you know, sizing a ring, Rolex repair, and then some other types of repairs. And then they'll click on Rolex repair. So they're going three pages into the website to land on a page for Rolex repair to see pricing and availability and things like that. So it's usually not from the homepage that you convert. The homepage needs to be, you know, easily read by the user. They can navigate easily, and they can get to exactly where they want to get within a couple of clicks.
Well, that's really where you're opening the door. You know, you're making it attractive, pretty. You know, people go, okay, I want to know more. But all they're doing is just sticking their head through the door. They need to go further.
Exactly. And it's wonderful if they're looking for Rolex repair, and you optimized for that, and you're ranked for it. And the person knows to type in Rolex repair versus sometimes they'll type in local jeweler or Rolex dealer or things like that. So you have, when you look at your competitors, you'll see what they're ranked for those keywords and get some ideas and hopefully get them to come land directly on your Rolex repair page.
Exactly. Okay, so a lot of what we're talking about here, the basics of SEO, we're talking about how it can help our small business. What other tips and advice do you have for people to, you know, look, you can be, I live in a very small town. It's just recently a town. It was a village before that. And I'm not sure it'll ever get much bigger than it is now because there's no place for it to grow. But there's a lot of these small 100-year-old businesses in this little bitty town that are rocking people's socks off because somehow or not, there's a 100-year-old dry cleaning building. I don't know that the building, I don't think dry cleaning existed then, but the building is 100 years old. Everybody knows about it. Everybody. I mean, it's just so well known because somebody's gotten a hold of their SEO.
So if we can pivot over to local SEO, probably what they're doing, or I'll speak in general, what you want to do is you want to make sure that you're going after cities. So let's say you use the example for dry cleaning. Let's say I'm in Los Angeles and there's suburbs of Los Angeles. So it could be dry cleaning Beverly Hills. It could be dry cleaning Hollywood, et cetera. You know, the areas that you service, you can build out content as opposed to doing dry cleaning only. You can build out content, you know, the keyword and then the city. And not just Los Angeles or San Francisco, but the suburbs that you're really targeting in these big cities. It could be that you're in a someone is in a smaller town, and it doesn't have suburbs like Miami or New York City and so on. It's the town is the suburb type of a thing, and so you can build out content for that. For example, I have a client that we do a home service, and so we took a service that they offer, and we took 10 suburbs of Los Angeles that they would love to rank for. And we built out landing pages and then blog posts for each one of those suburbs of the keyword. So we're talking about 10 suburbs, and then you have a landing page and a blog post for each. That's 20 bits of content that you have to create. But that's what they're looking for. They're looking for that, you know, whether it's a plumber, Santa Monica, plumber, Playa del Rey, plumber, et cetera, just these suburbs. You can put in the zip code. You can put in, depending on what the results come in from your search from some of the apps that I said, like SEMrush, your competitors might be doing the city in a zip code or just the city or whatever the case may be. Now, Google, when you're searching on Google, it's trying to figure out exactly where you are. And some people go incognito, or some people can go dark. But for the most part, there's a majority of people out there that are just online. And so Google is able to figure out whether you're from your IP address, or you're logged into your Gmail, or you're on your logged in from your Facebook or whatever. They're able to figure out and triangulate more or less where you are. And so the thing that comes up a lot of times when you're typing in, for example, dry cleaning, one of the auto things is near me. So if it's dry cleaning, it asks near me or, other suggestions. So as soon as you put in near me, it's trying to figure out where you are and will give you some results within that area. And so a lot of times you don't have to put in the city that you're in, it's already figuring it out. But to be safe, I would say you have to build out content for the important keywords. If you're targeting local SEO, go after the local cities with the keyword. Don't just get stuck on, don't just do dry cleaning and move on. Do dry cleaning and then maybe the nearest or most important 5, 10, 20 suburbs because it's important to you. You want to make sure that you're the dry cleaner that comes up in the SEO, in the Google results for those suburbs. Now, I don't think that people are going to drive 20 miles to go to their dry cleaner, especially in LA. 20 miles usually means an hour. So they're going to be more local. And so that opens up all kinds of opportunities where the small businesses can pick up on. Now, in your town, I don't know in your town if you know how many competitors they have or whatever, but if they've been around for a while.
Not a single one. It's the oddest thing. I'm still not sure why they bothered. Maybe they have a cousin or somebody who's doing this for them. But all of a sudden, I noticed that the building, which was leaning badly, I mean, it's south. Things go, they rot. But all of a sudden, the building has been freshened up. They have new offerings. So they had a reason for doing it, but they're the only ones. Good. Yeah.
Gotcha.
But you're right. You want to know where people are. If you're going to, tell people about your services or your product or your widget, whatever it is, you have to make sure they know where to find you or it or your building or whatever it is. So it's, I guess it's just common sense to say, okay, I am in New York. I'm in New York City. I'm in the borough of whatever it is. I need to make sure that people know that, and therefore Google knows that. So it's really just a thought process, isn't it? Where am I? What am I doing? And then just proceed on to make sure that all of your, you know, everything's there that needs to be found.
Exactly. And content is key, as every day people are building out sites and trying to get Google's attention. Google, again, I'm going to say it for probably the fourth time now, is a platform that is user-centric. The money is secondary. They feel like if they deliver the user, the advertisers will find them. And the advertisers will pay a premium, which they are. So that's their business model. So you want to create content that people are going to consume. They're going to share. They're going to come back to see what else you put out there and so on. If you put out there generic things with stock images or with, sometimes I've had clients reach out to me and, you know, they have a picture of their product or the service and the name of the service, haircut or barbershop or whatever. And there's a picture of the guy with his phone taking a picture of their client. And then they put that as a blog post. That is not going to rank. And that is not interesting to the user. You need to be able to explain and make the user feel like they were there. And whatever the case may be, whether it's putting the price, whether it's saying, I cut this person's hair in 15 minutes and, they want to
do it.
Being able to explain what it is, because it could be that some people, they have curly hair and they've had difficulty with barbers being able to straighten it or to cut it or whatever. And so if you have someone that's looking for whatever service and they come onto your website and there isn't an explanation, there's just a picture, or the explanation is bare bone. People, marketers or business owners, when they're doing their website, they get into this production kind of a mode. They're like, okay, I have to create this much content every other day, and I have to tweet every hour or every day, and I have to do this. But if it's not interesting, Google sees that people are not sharing it, they're not reading it, they're not consuming it, and therefore they're thinking of their users, and so you're not going to get ranked. Might as well do one decent blog article a month as opposed to five that you spent, you spend 1 hour on one, but you do five and you spend 1 hour when you put them all together on the five articles. Spend the 1 hour on one article. Create content that you would be proud of.
Exactly. You know what I've seen a lot of? PLR. You know what that is, right?
Yes.
Private label rights. And you can buy all kinds.
Yes.
Some of it is wonderful that you can repurpose and, create courses. I've bought some of it. I've used it. Some of it is so good that, I am perfectly willing to pay for that. And then you get some of the free stuff and people will make this mistake. And I've gotten to where I know who wrote that article and it wasn't them, because they'll just take it, plunk it into a blog post and say, there you go. Thanks very much. And oh my gosh, it's like that. You didn't even work at that. You're not sharing anything that your audience gives a flip about. So I know what you're talking about.
I think that kind of segues. I'm in complete agreement with you on that. I think it's a waste of time, and it's something that sometimes you do things in life and it ends up hurting you rather than benefiting you. And so it's a waste of time to do that. And that kind of transitions over to the other thing that I want to talk about, which is what upsets Google.
Exactly.
And so what happens is when you have, I ran into this when I first started off. I had a writer that was, I would give him a keyword and say, I need a 500 word article or a 1,000 word article on this keyword. And they would write it and I would take it, check it, and then post it and do my optimization. So what happened was, this is probably 12 years ago or so. What happened was as I was doing their work, I was seeing that their ranking was dropping. And it turns out that, I was going crazy trying to figure out, what's happening as I'm surrounded by marketers. So I was sharing and seeing if they have any experience. And one of the people, they told me that to put some of the content that's being created through plagiarism apps. So you can take an article and you can put it into one of these plagiarism apps, and then it'll come back and say, this paragraph is from this website, or this entire article is from that website, and you'll know that it's not authentic new content. It's just recycled. So if I take that content and put it on my website and pretend that I wrote it, Google is not going to think highly of me, because Google wants me to put out my own content. Or else if we have, let's say, a dentist in town, and there's 50 dentists, and all 50 dentists have the same content when you go to their site, it's not interesting to the end user. So
no, and
Google,
you recognize them. You start to recognize it's the same.
Exactly.
You know, maybe it's the media stations, media companies in your local town, could be Yellow Pages, and they'll put out the same thing, and each website's the same color, it's the same template, it's the same content, it's just a different doctor. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. And so that's not interesting to the user. And so that's going to be difficult for that website to be ranked. Maybe they're not looking to get that free traffic from Google. Maybe they have their different way. They're doing print or radio or whatever. It's going to give you that free traffic. And so these days, as a small business, I don't suggest to drop everything and focus on SEO. But I think that without SEO, in the long run, it's difficult to grow your customer base without SEO. It's important for your business to be making new clients all the time. And then after you make new clients, you have to figure out how to keep them. That has nothing to do with SEO. That has to do with your social media. You have your email list. You have, maybe you do some promotions where you're giving away an iPad mini every month or every year to everyone that's a customer or whatever. You can do different things to keep your clients engaged. That doesn't have anything to do with SEO. But constantly, as a small business, you need to make new clients, because no matter what, I'll use the example again of your dry cleaning example, people move away, people pass away, people have different experiences, or a competitor opens up, and then they're going to have problems creating new customers. But if they already have a customer base, they can always reach out to them via email and be like, we haven't heard from you in a while. We're giving you a $100 certificate on your next order of dry cleaning, and we'd love to see you back in here. You have 3 months to redeem this. And even if you're not going to go to them, suddenly they're throwing $100 your way, and you've done business with them, you're happy with them. For whatever reason, you've backed away, you can get them back in. It's much easier to sell to a client that you've sold to before than it is to create a new client. I think it's 10 times more expensive to sell to a new client than it is to sell to a client that you've sold to before.
It is.
And so,
people know this, but they still don't take the steps oftentimes to keep them as part of your warm market. And I have never understood that attitude.
Well, I'll try to justify it on behalf of them. I'll speak on behalf of them.
Okay.
I feel like as a business owner, they're running around and they have a lot of things to cover. And usually they don't have a degree in business or a degree in marketing. And so they're, if it's a sandwich shop, they're busy in the morning, 5 o'clock, going and buying the bread and buying the supplies and everything, and then dealing with employees. And they don't have time to be sitting there and thinking about some of these things. And so that's why it's good sometimes to lean on a marketing company and that has experiences, whether it's a company like myself or others. In my case right now, I have dozens of Google Ads campaigns that I'm running, dozens of Facebook Ads campaigns that I'm running, dozens of SEO campaigns. So I can see when a couple of them are not working, I can compare it to some of the ones that are working, see what's going on. I'm part of this search engine optimization class academy that I teach at. So they have instructors around the world. And so we get together every Thursday and we are on a Zoom call and we're sharing our victories and our defeats and seeing what's going on. A lot of times we're kind of tapped into an algorithm change as it's happening. Whereas before, if I just was running my small business SEO campaign or digital marketing campaign, I only know about one. In this case, given, you know, my clients and the clients of the other instructors, you know, we're talking about hundreds of campaigns that we're running and we're able to share with each other. And so that's why as a small business, they're not going to have that kind of data. And so by the time, you know, Google finds out that they're not happy with a website, and then they start to decrease the ranking and it starts dropping, by the time a small business figures that out and then figures out why that's happening and tries to reverse engineer it and run their business, it's a difficult ask for a small business.
Well, that makes sense. Just from a marketing perspective, I've never understood why you would not show a lot of love to your clients, your consumers, your prospects, you know, why you wouldn't be paying attention to them. But that does make a lot of sense. So I am going to go
as
back
marketer,
now.
Yes.
Yeah. And look at my, you know, where I'm guilty of doing the same thing, because I know I am at some level. I've got to be, right. So I'm going to go back and reverse engineer some of my stuff and say, wow, and you had the nerve to say that on the radio. I may have to come back and apologize. But, you know, it's easy to say, oh, I don't understand it, when you don't know what you might be doing wrong too. So, okay. So we figured out what Google is looking for in order to rank, basically. Did we cover everything there?
The last thing that we said that we would talk about, if I could just finish up, is what upsets Google. And the first thing was plagiarism. We talked about bad reviews. Do whatever you can to leave a customer happy. One of the examples that I always use with clients is when I go on Yelp and I'm going to purchase something or I'm going to sign up to a service, I look at the reviews on Yelp. And it could be that they have some negative reviews. And so my eye always goes to the negative reviews first. And I look to see if the business is trying to make any kind of an effort. So if you have, let's say, a consumer that is unhappy on Yelp with a product, and so if you have the business reaching out and saying, we don't know what happened here, can you please call us, we'll make this right, and the person replies angrily again, and the business tries again, like, we don't find your customer name in the database, there might be a mistake here, please call us, we'll make it right. And the person replies again in an angry fashion. There are people in this world that you just can't make happy. They're going to be upset no matter what. But if I see that the brand, the business is making an effort and standing behind their product or service, then I'll look at that negative review and think, okay, this is, you know, it's one of those things maybe. But if you have a business that is not replying to negative reviews, that is not making an effort to make things right, then that's going to be a problem. And that's the same thing with Google. Google's looking to see, okay, you can't make 100% of the people happy 100% of the time. But in the case when something goes wrong, what do you do? Do you say, okay, I'll give you your money back. We'll make this right. Call us. Do you not respond at all? Do you respond with an insult? You know, what are you doing to make this unhappy customer happy? And so the reviews are huge. Try to stay away from anything to do with spam. That's something that really upsets Google and upsets people in general. If you get, you know how it is, when you get emails in your email box, you know, every day from the same company, and you have all these filters and they still figure out a way to get through, it's not a good thing. And the last thing, as far as keeping Google happy, check your webmaster tools. If there are if they're sending you some kind of advice, it's a strong advice. Don't take it like a casual thing that if you do it, that would be great. If you don't do it, no big deal. Don't think of it like that. If they're going through the trouble of reaching out to you, that means that you need to act on it. And usually they're not, Google is not a company that says, hey, here's a list of things for you to do and I'll rank you. You just have to figure it out. And you have to, you know, and it's a moving target. So it's a moving target always. What's working today, there's an algorithm change or there's something, and then it changes a little bit. It doesn't change 100%, but sometimes it changes 20%, 30%, 10%, whatever the case may be. And you have to be cognizant of that.
Why is it that people will look at Google as an enemy? I'm seeing a lot of that. Are you?
Well, I think that sometimes the Google stands in the way of a business being very successful. Because if Google just gave them the ranking, they would be a success. So they get upset when they're not getting ranked. So that's one thing. I watched I'm forgetting the name of the show on Netflix where it was talking about social media and Google almost being in a it's hurting society. I forget what the name of the show was, but it's almost like when you're watching YouTube and you watch, let's say, a cat video, then in the suggestions are constantly cat videos. And so they're trying to sell their impressions. They're trying to figure out, what you're wanting. They're trying to guess it because in Google's case, Google has already built out a profile, personal profile for you. So if I go to Google and I type in climate change, depending on my history, the suggestions will come up climate change and the suggestion will be hoax or will be needs to change or elect Trump or elect Biden or whatever. It's guessing given my history. So what happens is as you look at those suggestions and you watch those videos and you get those search results over and over again, you think that's what the entire world is watching and reading. And so you have almost a society that either thinks one way or the other. And there was a show on this that on Netflix that's really popular and it's driving me nuts that I can't remember it. But it was kind of showing Google and YouTube and things like that as an enemy, and things need to change with their algorithms when it comes to the suggestions.
Gotcha. Well, and so in other words, based on whatever they profiled us as, we're almost in a bubble of our own making, an echo chamber of our own making.
Yes. The thing is, they're trying to give you, you know, make things easier for you. So if I went to I went online and I Googled pizza, pepperoni and mushroom. So the next time I go, it's remembering that I'm interested in that. So it'll come up as a suggestion, pepperoni and mushroom, until I change my search habits. And so that's what it's doing, is trying to make it easier for us. So that's kind of the premise of SEO and social media, is that if you're interested in something, they're wanting to put the content in front of you that you're interested in. So for me, let's say I'm not interested in paragliding. So there's no way that paragliding materials or paragliding tours or whatever are going to come up on anywhere on my social media or my Google. But if I search for that once, you'll find ads coming up on your social media and your Google in no time. And that's what Google is doing. It's offering you, it's trying to figure out what you're searching. And then, okay, this person's interested in outdoor activities, or he's going to take a vacation, or he wants to buy this thing. And so it's kind of putting out, it's connecting that marketer with that user. And for the marketer, it's great because the marketer is not just putting the ads everywhere. Google is, and the social media channels are putting that that offer in front of the right audience. And so it's kind of a double-edged sword. But for the most part, I'm here to talk about how it works. And then if you want to change those patterns, then all you have to do is change. You know, the next time, in the case of the pepperoni pizza example, the next time put in a different put in cheese pizza or whatever, then it'll remember that.
No. Blue Point Crab. That's the best pizza. Blue Point Crab.
All right. I have to try that.
Oh, gosh. If you ever get down here, you've got to go to Dino's Pizza. Oh, my God. It'll seriously, you'll go outside and kick your tires. It's that good. Listen, we went from SEO to pizza. How in the world? Listen, we are out of time. This is the quickest hour. It always is. And thank you so much. Where can people find you before I let you go?
They can go to my website, thisismysouthbay.com. And if anyone is interested, they can go to the website, thisismysouthbay.com. There's a book now button. Click there, book a 15-minute appointment with me. I'll answer all your SEO questions. If you have questions on your website, which keywords they're ranked for, competitors, anything, I'll be happy to go over it with you.
And you did something similar for one of my clients when we first started talking about getting you here as a guest, and I really appreciate that. I mean, you just jumped right in and gave me the information he needed. So I'm going to tell the audience, take advantage of that because he will help you. So, Eric, I already asked where people can find you. So I wanted to thank you so much for being here, and thank you for all the SEO tips. And as I mentioned in my virtual green room, I'm good at a lot of things. SEO is not one of those things, and I will always recommend that people find somebody who is an expert and who has mastered this, and clearly you have. So I'm hoping that this will help people find you and find out how SEO can really, move them along the internet. So it's been wonderful chatting with you, and I thank you for all the tips and the advice. And before we say goodbye, I would like to remind our audience to be sure to look for us in iTunes and honestly anywhere else you consume your business podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, we're everywhere. Just look for your partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. Eric, thank you again.
Thank you so much.
Get your voice heard. If you would like to launch your own far-reaching podcast, contact Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com and go to the podcast tab.